From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 355, recorded live Thursday, January 17th, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support, online at telerik.com, and by franklins.net. Training developers to work smarter, and now offering GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Jenny Leigh Fleury, a senior director at Microsoft, about how she works, accessibility, and computing.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here on campus at Microsoft, and I've got the nice opportunity to sit down with Jenny Leigh Fleury, thank you, who is a senior director in accessibility and customer experience here at Microsoft. And you are deaf.
Yes.
But we're doing a podcast. What an amazing gift that is.
I don't know what to say to that. So, yes, I lost my hearing when I was a small child. So I lost my hearing through measles. My sister was born without, with hearing loss as well. My hearing has degenerated over the years. So no, I don't have a lot of hearing.
You said your sister was born without hearing, but you lost yours through measles. Is that a coincidence, or do you think you were genetically destined to have
medically,
no hearing?
Medically, they would say it was a coincidence, but given the propensity of hearing loss in my family, I've got uncles and family members who also have loss, and my dad even has some loss. It's a little confusing, but it's just the way we lived, and we live.
Your accent and your intonation of your words is not a typical deaf person, or what at least myself as a hearing person would expect a person with deafness to sound like. How did you manage that, and is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, for me, it works great. I'm what we kind of term deceptive deaf. So in terms of how you walking in my office and meeting me, you would never know that I have deafness. My sister, on the other hand, is someone who's visually deaf. She wears hearing aids. Her speech is more pronounced. But at times she hears a lot more than I do. I'm a lip reader. I learned lip reading from my mother when I was a small child. And my hearing at that point was probably 60% down. It's gradually slid over the years. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but it's just meant that I learned a certain way of understanding my world. I went on to get a music degree. I think my music degree, I was a clarinet player, really helped me with vibration, acoustics, intonation, and really understanding how my voice presents itself. And, so it's a lot of work. I don't keep intonation in my voice without work. It takes work and constant reiteration. But it gives me a whole ton of benefits that come out the other side.
Since you know ASL, American Sign Language, right?
I know Pidgin ASL. I would never say I'm an ASL speaker. I know enough to get by. Yeah.
That's an interesting bridge, because I know that in America, and perhaps less so in other countries, that people who are what they call hardcore deafies, true deaf culture advocates, feel very strongly about their role in the world. And here you are with a foot in each world, almost. Is that an inappropriate thing to say?
I think anything can be said.
Does that offend you inappropriately? I'm sorry.
No, I'm not easily offended. You have to try harder than that.
I will.
Think a couple of things with bring it. A couple of things with deafness. I honestly think that the hardest space when it comes to deafness, I think every disability is different. How it manifests in people is different. Everyone has their own version of that reality. My grandmother's 96. She would say her hearing is beautiful. I can tell you that it's not. That it manifests different for every person. Just look at me and my sister. In the way that I learned, because my hearing gradually slid, I learned all the techniques that are a moderately mild deaf person would learn. They learned lip reading, how to communicate in a room. I think sitting in an orchestra was probably the biggest thing that helped me, understanding how to watch people the way that you have to when you're a musician. But as I've slid, the way that I now work at Microsoft is leveraging some of those techniques, which is where I learned BSL. Again, Pidgin, I would never say I was an expert. So British Sign Language, and then changed to American Sign Language when I moved over here. It's every deaf person has what works for them, and I respect that.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask is that when we learned sign language, my wife and I, with my son growing up, we did baby sign language. And we wanted him to be able to communicate before he could speak. And the person that we learned from was a deaf professor who did not speak. And that kind of was my first introduction to deaf culture. And he had almost exclusively deaf friends. His whole world was a deaf world, and it was inconvenient for him to step out. You said you used the term deceptively deaf, which I think is a really an interesting term, because if you look at you, or if you look at someone who is deceptively anything, you can't really tell. I mean, I'm deceptively diabetic, and it doesn't become a problem unless I'm overseas with a friend and I need some sugar and I need it right now. And then suddenly I went from being able-bodied Scott to incredibly disabled, I need help right now, Scott. And that has been my foot in one world and a foot in the other world. Do you, is it sliding to the point where you're going to become profoundly deaf? Completely deaf?
So I'm a firm believer that science and medicine is not the be-all and end-all. If I believe the doctors, I would have not been able to speak about 20 years ago. And so bunk. As far as I'm concerned, I do believe that, you know, my hearing loss is degrading. And that's a medical fact. My speech is degrading. It's worse now than it was 5 years ago. And it's difficult for me to navigate in some environments. And that means that for me, there are certain things that I know I'm going to be successful at, but put me in a darkened room with a bunch of people speaking, and foreign accents and things. And that it's not going to be fun. And two, I'm not going to be successful. So I get picky with how I communicate. But I'm not, my deafness and the way that I've learned has enabled me to have, you know, my friends are a mix. My environment is a mix. My partner is hearing. My sister is not, you know, so I'm in that blended world, and I respect people in the community, as every type of disability where they're not able or choose not, to commute, you know, be in that blended environment. That is a tough gig, I think, but there's nothing to say people can't, again, be enabled to be completely successful. And there's many, many people out there who are.
So we're not alone here in the room, and if there's a pause as we speak, it's because you have a helper. Who is your helper, and what is her job?
Helper. I'm not sure if she'd like to be called a helper.
Belinda's
in the room as well. She's my ASL interpreter. I have a group that helped me. They will transition depending on what's going on in my calendar. They won't speak.
I wasn't looking for her to speak. I was interested in the sounds of her fingers.
Go for it.
I was just going to put the microphone next to it while she translated.
I have no idea that that makes a sound. Does it make a sound?
It makes there's a sense of quickness to it. It adds, there's a sense of tempo, there's a musicality to it, because she is not in my peripheral vision, but I'm hearing a movement and a friction on her hands.
You're trying to explain that to a deaf girl?
I'm trying to explain it to a deaf musician with a sense of tempo.
No, I had no idea. It's funny. We had a deaf education class last week with another employee I was running, and she talked about how she was sitting with her partner the night before, and her partner could hear static electricity, and both of us were cracking up because neither of us knew that that made sound. So, I respect that.
When a hearing person who is interested in deaf culture, like myself and like my wife and my family, see different people talking. You know, you're at, you know how it is. You're at Red Robin and then there, oh, there's a deaf couple over there. Or there's a young person talking to their friend. Each person has a tempo and a musicality to their hands. And then some vocalize when they speak. And there is music in that, not just in the visual music, but in the sound of the deafness and of the vocalization that doesn't sound like anything. It's not any sound. It's not English that comes out of their mouth. So that's what I was trying to capture there with mm-hmm. Belinda, not in any way to intrude on her space.
No. I should explain the ethics behind interpreters are that they, because I saw you putting the microphone towards her, and you know, you could see her shaking her head, and because the ethics actually dictate that really I am the voice, and they are the enabler, and I'm
exactly
so fortunate to have. I'm being honest, and I shouldn't tell them, they'll get big heads, but they are some of the best interpreters I've ever worked with, which is so important to my role here at Microsoft and, you know, my ability to perform, and be successful in a company is really down to these guys. You know, anytime that we get plaudits for what we're doing, it's really these guys. Cause I wouldn't be able to do what I do every day without them. So now they've gone red, we can move on. But, yeah, I use a variety of different accommodations of which, Belinda and a couple of my others are.
Mm-hmm. And, you schedule your day and your meetings. Do you have to front load them or load them in such a way so that you know that you have support at the meetings that you need support at?
So the way my calendar, I wish I had control enough to be able to do that. You don't always get to dictate what's on your calendar when bosses call meetings you have to run. But there are things that we do. We categorize meetings as they come in. They get categorized A, B, C, D. If it's an A meeting, I'm missing, you know, meeting with the executives of the company. They're going to talk fast. They're going to talk with a lot of people in the room. I'll have two interpreters sitting with me and they'll be rotating 15, 20 minutes on and off. Mm-hmm. B, then it's just like we have here, Belinda and I and yourself. She'll be here for the whole duration and we know each other well enough to know how to make this groove. And then C is captioning. And we use two different types of captioning. So we use on-site where a lady will come, or a gent, with a stenographer, like you see in a court.
Hmm. Like a court reporter, and they're
yep.
Oh, okay.
Now I can either sit and look at their screen, or if I'm on a conference call, then I'll just log on to an IE, page and the captions of what's being said will appear. Little lag. You know, you get a little lag. Mm-hmm. But it's like watching captions on your TV. Mm-hmm. And then DM on my own. If that's someone I know well, and I feel comfortable with my lip reading, of them, or I'm comfortable that if for any reason we'll switch, we often switch to instant communicator if we need to, or whiteboards or whatever works. Mm-hmm. That's the joy of working in a company like Microsoft. Technology comes in big.
I have the captions on my TV, maybe 30% of the time, 40% of the time, and often we'll stop our TV, back up, turn it on. And I've mm-hmm. found them to be rather disappointing. I feel like for some shows, I'm missing out. Like, I'm like, I don't think he said that. And that's not right. I mean, do you ever feel like you're only getting 90% of the story and that there's some subtle nuance that's mm-hmm. being missed?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I'll just tell you a little story. I go to, I love the movies. In fact, I'm a huge Oscars buff. So, I've got a lot of movies to watch in the next couple of months for the Oscars. The movie theater that I go to, I get a captioning machine. I give my driver's license. They give me a captioning machine. I sit in my seat and it sits into the coffee stand and it shows captions. Often I'll see a movie more than once. Now, the first time, sometimes those machines aren't available or they're broken. It's new technology. They haven't worked out all the kinks yet. So that's when I'll see a movie twice and I'll see it without the captions. And I think I've got it. I think I've got that script down. When in actual fact, all I'm doing is focusing on James Bond. I'm not, I clearly am missing stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You cannot lip read someone in a movie. It's very, very hard to do. So I'll be making up the script, which is often more imaginative than what they're actually talking about. But I'll see it twice so that I can really understand it. So in those environments, sometimes you will be clearly knowing that you're missing stuff, other times not. And you will be amazed how much fluff there is in television programs, in movies that I think my world is better not knowing about. It makes it simpler, quicker, and smarter. And I'm pretty good at filling in gaps.
Yeah.
I think deaf is being, it's much more like a jigsaw puzzle than people realize.
That's interesting. When I think about captioning that has been formalized, like a 1 hour drama, that captioning is almost always correct. But captioning of like, the morning news show when they're, when they're having a chat back and forth, I find that the amount of information contained in the average person's sentence, the signal to noise is, maybe 50%, 60%. There's a lot of ums and hems and haws. Does your captioning system and or your interpreter cut out that chaff and then leave you only with the signal? Or do you see that we are up our sentence?
Part of the worst thing you can do with a person with deafness is do the, it wasn't important. I actually want to see the ums, the ahs, and the, the pauses, the long pauses. It's important for me because it tells me a lot of what's going on. Those are shown and they're shown for a reason. What they'll get wrong is, names, places, things that are particularly the nouns, right? They'll get those wrong. What a lot of the live shows do is they prep the captioners. They have the transcript, the names. They know who's coming on, what the timing is. They'll have the questions. That's when you know you've got a good setup. When the company is working with the captioners to make sure the accuracy is right.
Mm-hmm.
I really want that. And in fact, if someone's telling a joke and then won't repeat it, I'll get miffed. The great thing about being in a company like Microsoft is that I do have the ability on a conference call to say, stop, two of you are talking, come on, work out who's going to talk first, or you got to repeat that, we missed it, or, just spell it out. I have that, I'm empowered to do that. I think part of having a disability is being your own self-advocate and having that confidence. Even when there's somebody who's scary on that call, just saying, you know what? I didn't catch it. And I really want to understand what you're saying. So repeat it. And you may laugh 20 seconds after them. But hey, laughing twice, I think, is better than not laughing at all.
That confidence is hard to have because one of the, and this is in quotes and air, one of the disabilities I have is that I'm a remote worker. So I live in Portland, Oregon, and I am simply a voice, or I'm a tiny video square, and they forget me. I've had times when they've left the room, and I can hear the sound of the empty room, and like, okay, I need to do my part in the stand-up now. Guys, anyone? Hello? Hello? And it's very sad, and I think to myself, if I had the confidence to be more assertive, then this would not be a problem, but then there's the concern that you're different. You're the remote person, and they'll think poorly of you. Do you think that – I'm trying to say you don't feel bad that you're reminding people that there's a missing piece when you make that assertion that, hey, I need to be heard? Because I feel as a remote, I'm reminding them I'm remote when I'm saying, please have a camera on for me, please. I'm the remote guy. Do you see the parallel?
I totally do, and I think it's a human – it's a human nature.
It's an insecurity.
It's a question. It's something that I would rather not have to do it. But it was an epiphany for me in my 20s, I think, which was, the realization that if I'm going to be successful in life, in career, then the only one who's going to lose out by not speaking out is me. And, I'm very grounded in that. I am different and I can't conform to some of the norms. I don't think that's a bad thing. I actually think that what we bring by being different in whatever way that is, whether it's disability, gender, sexuality, whatever that is, brings something else to the conversation. What I generally find when I speak up is that it's you actually add a level of respect into the conversation that sometimes doesn't exist. And yeah, as many stereotypes exist about Microsoft, I can say we do talk fast. And we do try and talk over one another, and we are all smart. And sometimes just saying, you know what, you got to slow it down. We're missing you. Mm-hmm. And I really want to hear what you have to say. Just it takes it to a different level. You know, those that have worked with me for a long time can sometimes forget as well. And I love that because I like that I can be deceptive. And I hope that remains. Who knows? But I also love that it's, I'm in an environment where I do not feel uncomfortable saying that. There are moments, there are always moments, the same as a musician walking out on stage, you get those nerves. But if you're grounded in what you believe, then I think it's actually all for the best.
How accommodating should people be? And I don't know if the term is able-bodied or regular or prototypical. What is the term for the average person that doesn't have any different abilities? Like, I'll give you an example. My good friend Saqib is blind, and he mentioned once, six years ago, that I wasn't putting any alt tags on my graphics on my website.
Alt text.
Right, alt text. And every single blog post since then, I have done that, and I've even sometimes left little messages just for the blind people in the alt text. And whenever I write a blog post, I think of my friend, and I think, what helpful piece of text should be here for my friend? And I don't know if that's because I have this friend, or if it's because I'm starting to think about the world beyond just the able-bodied. But that has got me thinking about colorblind and icon design and captioning. I close caption all of my YouTube videos now. And it's so tedious. It's so tedious. It takes hours and hours. Even this show here, we have a court reporter who will transcribe this into a PDF. But at what point should it become an inconvenience and I should just say that's enough? Enough people can see this.
I don't think it's ever enough. So I applaud you for your efforts. I think taking that time, if you get one extra listener, one extra viewer, my firm belief is that no effort is enough. And it's always worth it. Always worth it. Because you will bring in some person who's never listened to you before, who gets a new, fresh perspective, who's inspired to go and do amazing things. I firmly believe that. But that's not to say that the technology is where we want it to be. I would wish that closed captioning could be a lot easier and a lot less cost.
Yeah.
And I hope that that's in our future, at least in, you know, my short-term future. To go to your first question about terminology, and I think terminology is something that changes over time. The way that I think about it now is different to where I thought about it 5 years, 10 years ago. So the first principle that I hold dear is that we are people first. I actually don't like anything that is disabled. I actually don't like that term. That's my personal thing. Mm-hmm. I would prefer it's just pure syntax of it's a person with a disability. So I'm actually a person. I'm a person with hearing loss, a person who is blind, a person with a mobility impairment. But you'll also hear me say, I'm a deaf girl. And you'll hear somebody like Saqib or, others that work for me saying, I'm blind. And, that's totally okay as well. That's what they choose to use. There are certain words that you shouldn't use. Handicap is actually moving out of preference and out of fashion. And I can see that. Handicapped. It's just not a word that describes me. I would never use that to refer to myself.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, the first principle is they are a person first and then listen for their cues. I think the other thing with disability and etiquette is to listen, you know, and make the offer. If you see someone who needs help with a door, but if they take you up on it, great. If they don't be offended. It may be they're working on that independent move of opening a door. But make the offer.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's great to be curious. And, you know, just as you just said, how does it, you know, what are you like? And it's great to be curious because you'll find some people who are perfectly confident and capable and want to be termed as disabled. Mm-hmm. I don't. So I think being curious is also a really great thing.
What kind of things are you working on yourself here in the area of accessibility to improve things for other people, like your job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my job is to look at the customer experience for accessibility at Microsoft. It's a new position. I've been here about a year now. So I stepped out from managing support, service, sales, businesses. I did that for about 15 years. So I come from a business background, and I really just got drawn into accessibility through my work leading the disability resource group, employee resource group here at Microsoft, and forming that. So my work here is to look at, you know, a few key aspects of accessibility from a customer lens. So holistically, I want accessibility to be part of the air that we breathe. I want adding captions to that, mm-hmm. To that movie to be easy to do. So it's automated. It's just easily done. Mm-hmm. When we look and, we have some amazing products are out there, but how do we take them to the next level by looking at what customers have to say? How can we support customers with disabilities? How can we support accessibility in a different way? So we're researching in a few places and driving certain initiatives in others.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, what have you done to your setup, your Windows? Do you use any of our accessibility things? Like when the Instant Messenger beeps, does the screen flash for you, or what are some things that you have done to your Windows?
Not a lot. I find Windows to be incredibly accessible. I clearly don't have sound notifications, but I've been a Windows user for most of my life, and if the notification comes up in the bottom right, I see it. I don't need more than that. So I don't have a ton that I need from a PC. What I would love is that if I go on a conference call anytime, it's instantly captioned. Mm. You know, there's things like that that I can imagine a new world. And I know I speak for others in that. Whereas if you have other disabilities, Windows has some amazing features. So in the Ease of Access Center, if you are blind, there is a screen reader built into Windows. There are mobility features. It's, you know, several features in there that are useful to other aspects of disability. So my experience is not, different, mm-hmm. As a person with deafness.
Do you have accessibility things in your home, like lamps that flash when the phone rings, or what if the fire alarm goes off?
Yeah, the first accessibility device I have is my partner. He's very well trained, and he will grab me. It's a serious thing, though. You have to let people know. You have to tell them. You're like, you know, if there's a doorbell going, not going to hear that. If there's a smoke alarm going, I'm not going to hear that. And I also train my kid. I think it's she's 5, and she gets it. She's like, mommy's ears don't work. That's how she talks to others about it. But she'll come get me if there's something at the door. She'll come get me if she hears something and a noise. She'll also get me if there's a spider. So I haven't got it quite down yet. But yeah, lights are very important to me. Vibrations also very important to me. So whether that's an alarm clock, strobes, mm-hmm. fire alarms. When my kiddo was a baby, there's lots of, you know, gadgets and toys you can get just to light up a room.
Mm-hmm.
So every time she cried, my lamp by my bed would go off. So I had to gradually tweak the sensitivity of that as the other, because trust me, there was no sleep there for a while. But
yeah.
Like I'm sure everyone else, right? What cries can you, I don't think that's just a hearing thing. What cries can you let go? What cries
yes.
do you move for?
There's the, I'm injured and I've fallen on my head,
yeah.
cry.
Yeah. but it's not, you can't distinguish so much. So you had to just learn the decibel level from that.
Yeah.
But they learn pretty fast.
So I'm going to go around the corner on this one. Are you a safe driver? And when you use products like, for example, a car, are you thinking about accessibility and then how you're going to apply that back to like products that we have?
So yes, people who are deaf can drive.
Well, I know you can drive. I just don't know whether you're going to hear me honking behind you.
No. Why? But that's a good thing, right? Depends. Why would I need to hear that? I don't want to hear you honk. I have no interest in that whatsoever.
Maybe I'm trying to help you.
Well, I'm sure. Then flash your lights. And that's actually what people do. So I am very good at my mirrors, very good at, you know, there's a fallacy in, does another sense grow when another one is compromised? The medical, again, is that, no, of course they don't. The reality is, yes, they do, at least my personal view, because I do think you become just more aware of body language in a room, of light signals and when they go off. You know, my light signals will wake me up in the morning. They don't wake up my partner. So, you know, it's curious, either that or he's just ignoring them. So you become very observant.
Yeah. When you use consumer products or products that aren't accessible, are you always kind of cataloging those in your mind and then bringing those ideas back to work? Because you said that you're kind of a customer advocate. I'm trying to understand how you take their feedback and make sure that the product gets those ideas.
So there's a number of ways very formally that we get feedback. There's actually a survey that sits on our Microsoft.com/enable site. I get a lot of feedback from that. It's just a quick form where people can go in and give their feedback on how important is accessibility to you and how satisfied are you and what is it you want to see? What is it that's great? You know, give me some of those nuggets of joy that will help me to think about that future experience. We also get a ton of feedback through a lot of our Microsoft properties. So anytime you're searching for content, checking out content, knowledge articles, or you're speaking to an agent, we get a lot of intel from that. Particularly if it's about an accessibility feature, you're asking about that. And we're trying to get much more focused about the support for people with disabilities. And that's an area of real data that we've had and data that we need.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that. My own experience, of course, comes in, as does everyone on the team that's working around me. So actually, I had a guy who's a colleague of mine who was at CES last week, part of my team, and has come back today talking about headphones that relay sound through bone conducting. So I use these a lot during my music degree. So the headphones that sit just behind the ear on the bone. Now it's unclear again, medically, how much you hear or how much you feel. It's very hard to differentiate. But for me, it takes music to a different level. There was for the first time an accessibility inclusiveness, wing to CES. So I'm looking forward to digging through all of these things and intel that these guys have brought back. But we also leverage the internal community is the other one, I would say. We have people with disabilities at Microsoft. We want more, because they help us to understand, drive, and build better products. It comes back to that whole philosophy around diversity. If you have a diverse group of people, you will get diverse thinking. And that includes disability. So, yeah, I'm fortunate and honored to really chair that group, and how we can connect them with product groups, and whether it's testing products, helping design products, is a really important role of what I do.
Very cool. So I will put links to some of these things in the show notes, like Microsoft.com/enable.
Yep.
And you guys see those surveys. They don't just go.
I read every single one.
All right. See, I like to hear that. Mm-hmm. All right. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for your interest.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.